Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Thomas Seneca. Welcome, Thomas.
Great. Thanks, Wayne. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. Thomas is a partner with TM Wealth Management and head of alternative strategies. He is also an adjunct professor of finance at Virginia International University and has worked as an investment banker for Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank, where he conducted due diligence and engineered complex financial valuation models for IPOs, M&A, and private equity transactions. That's interesting. We'll have to talk about that a little bit today. Mr. Seneca also was director of corporate development and M&A at Sprint Nextel. He holds a bachelor's in economics from Brigham Young University and a master's in business administration from Columbia Business School in New York. So let's get to it. Let's get right at it. Tell me about the investment environment today. Investors, you know, they may not be in the market now. They missed an opportunity during a large increase in the first quarter. Should we be looking for another correction to the market? Should they be getting into the market now? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I hear this a lot from investors that, you know, there's been this great run up the first quarter of this year. Should I be waiting on the sidelines? Get out now. Wait on the sidelines for this correction to happen that we're all waiting for, and then get back in.
Okay.
And there's a couple of things to think about there. First, if being in the equity markets is part of your financial plan, it's part of your investment plan to be in the equity markets, then you don't want to be timing the market. You want to be in, but you want to be in the right investments. There's also a couple of things to think about as to where the markets are now. And if the market has to have really three things going on for it to be toppy or to be concerned that the market has hit its peak. First of all, the economy needs to be hitting on all cylinders.
Is it?
It's not. It's getting close. It's getting much better. And there's a couple things that I'll go into that,
okay,
that kind of highlight that.
All right.
The second is that valuations need to be rich. Valuations aren't rich right now.
No.
And then the third is investor sentiment. How investors feel about the environment and about the economy needs to also be somewhat rich or toppy for us to start to get concerned that we've kind of peaked.
Okay.
Let's start a little bit with the economy since you asked about that.
Yep.
Is the economy hitting on all cylinders? No. First thing you can point to is unemployment, right? We're at 8%. Historically, for the last 50 years, it's been about 6%. So we've got some room to grow there in the economy.
And there was some recent trending that unemployment seemed to be increasing once again.
It's kind of plateauing. It's hit that 8-ish percent, and now it's kind of starting to plateau. And part of that, I think, is a little bit of the political environment we're in right now. There's going to be a rosy picture put on just about any news that comes out of Washington these days, given the election
that's
coming
election,
up.
That's right.
Exactly.
So people are going to try to spin it, at least the Democrats will try to spin it positively to make it seem like everything is on the uptick.
Right, exactly. So that's another thing to kind of focus on. The second thing to look at is housing starts. Historically, housing starts have been about a 1.5 to 1.6 million a year.
Okay.
As of February of this year, we're only at about 700,000. So lots of room to grow.
Wow.
In housing starts. And then the last is light vehicle sales. That's a big component of our economy.
Cars,
yeah. Historically, it's been about 15 million cars a year that we sell. And just recently, within the last quarter of this year, we're starting to now approach that 15 million number for the economy.
So things seem to be picking up on cars. Housing starts are a little below expectations or what we would want to consider as a rambunctious economy.
Right.
And unemployment is still a little bit high right now.
Yeah, I'd say not more than a little bit. It's quite a bit high for the historical average. I mean, 2% sounds like a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the entire employment force, 2% is a pretty big number of people that are unemployed, and that doesn't even factor into the equation, the amount of people that may be underemployed or perhaps have even given up looking for employment.
Okay.
So currently, to think about where the markets are, one, the economy's not hitting on all cylinders.
Right.
The second thing we talked about was investor sentiment, how they feel about the market. And historically, over the last 25 years, as we look at the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, it's run about 85% is the historical average. Right now, we're below that. I think just last week was announced it was about 76%. And the thing
What does 85% mean? 85% of what?
It means that what they do is they go out and they ask a number of consumers how they feel about the market. And they go through a survey, and ultimately what the 85% means is that 85% of the respondents are positive, have a positive outlook on the economy.
Okay.
And historically, it's been 85. It's currently about 76.
Okay.
When we got into kind of the financial crisis of 2008, and even in August of 2011, we were down in the 50s. On that number.
Wow.
And so we've got a lot of room to run there. And also another interesting statistic on that is that when the consumer sentiment hits a trough, a bottom, it usually within 12 months of that trough, the S&P returns about 23%.
Okay.
So if we hit a trough back in August of 2011, since that point, we've only, the S&P's only increased about 9%. So that'd leave us about another 11 to 12% to run on the S&P 500, given how it's reacted historically. So people aren't feeling, you know, super happy. It's not merry. Everything's good. We can't miss. And so when you get into those situations where there's room to run on consumer sentiment, we haven't hit a top yet either.
Okay.
And then the last thing we talked about was valuation. And historically, the S&P price earnings ratio has been roughly around 16 times. If we've got earnings this year of the S&P on average about $100 a share, that would put us about $1,600 on the S&P.
Okay.
So right now we're about $1,400. So again, when we come back
to below average.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You mentioned three critical factors that sort of help you gauge whether or not the economy is, you know, at its peak or, you know, subject to a potential correction. I didn't hear you mention anything about manufacturing. And I didn't, you know, unemployment obviously is a key factor that sort of ties into the manufacturing sector, but also, you know, orders and earnings of companies. I mean, how are companies doing in this environment? Are their earnings recovering? Are they up? Are there explanations for it? Are earnings down? I mean, what's happening right now, at least in today's economic environment, and how might that help us make some decisions about whether to go into the market or stay out?
Well, it's been interesting. Over the last couple of years, since basically the 2008 financial crisis, companies have been going through somewhat of a deleveraging process, getting rid of their debt, becoming more efficient.
Consumers should be doing the same thing, shouldn't they?
Well, it's interesting. The same thing's starting to happen. It's like consumers have lagged corporations because they've seen, okay, corporations are starting to lay people off. They're getting more efficient. They're getting rid of their debt. And now consumers are starting to find that as well. That, you know, they want to get out of their mortgages, out of their student loans, and reduce their credit debt, their credit card debt. So that's going on as well. So corporations are extremely healthy. If we look at, you know, historically for U.S. corporations, their P.E. or price earnings ratio has been about 14 times. It's currently about 12 and a half. So currently undervalued given the health of where
earnings
usually have been and the historical price earnings ratio for those companies. So from my perspective, I look, and a lot of it depends on what the specific needs of a client and goals of a client may be in terms of being in the market. But, you know, it's going to be a bumpy ride, but I think we're on the cusp of an extended bull market for the next couple of years.
I hope so. I'd love to see that. I think one of the key factors that will send this thing, you know, perhaps in the opposite direction is what happens in Europe. And then I think another issue that is affecting all of us is the looming pending increase, massive increase in tax rates that's going to occur on January the 1st. A lot of economists that I've heard speak have alluded to that as being not a good thing for the economy.
Sure. And, you know, you talk about what's going on over in Europe. And, you know, I was meeting with a client last week and you know, was making some of the same recommendations to him. And he says, yeah, but what happens, you know, all it's going to take is another Greece or another terrorist attack or something, and then we're all in trouble.
Yeah.
And my response to him was, I said, you know, yes, there's going to be some impact to that, but we already know how the market's going to react to that. We've seen what happens when Greece comes around with something like Greece. We've seen what happens in 2011,
right,
or 2001 with the terrorist attacks there. So it's not these uncommon or shocks to the market that we haven't experienced before, and we see how the market reacts. And so it's really about positioning your investments to understand how the market's going to react should some of those things happen.
That's a good observation. Well, you know, many of the financial advisors I interview on this show and people we talk to around the area refer to themselves as wealth managers. And, you know, I've often wondered, what does that mean? You know, how do you define what a wealth manager is? What is a wealth manager?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting, the change in my industry in terms of investments and financial advisors. And the challenge has been is how to distinguish what some of us do from what some of the other financial advisors do. And a lot of people use that term to define what they do, when in reality, what they're doing is peddling a product, whether it be an investment product, an insurance product, something like that. I'll say, well, I'm a financial advisor. And so in an effort to kind of distinguish between what maybe a product peddler or someone who has a specific product to sell from what I do and other wealth managers do, we've utilized the term of wealth management. And to give your listeners some perspective as to what that means, we look at it as a quarterback of a client's financial lives. So if you look at, you know, the Washington Redskins just drafted RG3, and unfortunately they drafted somebody else, another quarterback in I think it was the fourth round, and so that's a little perplexing. But
Kirk Cousins. Well, you know, maybe it's a hedging strategy. You never know.
That's right. Maybe it's a hedge that should RG3 get injured or not play out the way that they think it should, they've got a backup.
Right.
But you know, the quarterback and the head coach will sit down at the beginning of the year or even the beginning of a week for a game, and they'll come up with a game plan. And the quarterback needs to understand not only the plays, but all the tools in his arsenal to be able to achieve their goal, whether that be a win, a touchdown, or a Super Bowl.
Right.
And so that's understanding what the running back does, the offensive line, the wide receivers, the tight ends, the routes they're going to run. So he's got this whole field view of everything that's going on.
Right.
Well, from a wealth manager's perspective, same role that we fill. The coach is our clients. We sit down with them and develop a game plan as to how we're going to achieve their financial goals. And then from there, we understand all the different tools that are at our disposal, whether it be attorneys, accountants, insurance advisors, the different investment tools and products that are available to us, so that we can look at a client's financial lives and understand how all the different pieces and parts come together and understand how they impact each other, rather than just coming to a client saying, hey, I've got this product. It's got to be great for you. Let me figure out how to fit you in it.
Right.
And we take the reverse approach as wealth managers and look at, okay, what do you want to achieve? And then we'll go out and find the specific products or services or other advisors to help them achieve that specific goal.
So that's a great analogy. I like that. I noticed that you're in charge of alternative strategies at your firm. What are alternative investments for the listeners' perspective?
You know, this is pretty topical, Wayne, and I think it's important that your listeners or anyone that's trying to develop a diversified portfolio, whether on their own or with someone else, understand alternative strategies. I would liken it to what happened a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago, where advisors and investors were now starting to have to add some international exposure to their portfolios for the diversification benefits. Alternatives now is becoming a larger portion of a diversified portfolio for one key reason. That's correlation. And so to help your listeners understand a little bit about correlation, let me give you an analogy. Correlation deals with how two asset classes interact with each other. So, for example, let's take, you know, downtown DC. You've got a street vendor, and he's selling umbrellas. Well, when it rains, he's going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
When it doesn't rain, he's not making very much money. So he decides to diversify his product offering, and he starts to offer raincoats. Well, now he's got more products to offer, but he's still only making money when it rains. So the correlation idea would be now he needs to add something where he can make money on sunny days, and that would be if he decided to offer sunglasses. So now he's got two products that if it's raining, he makes money, and if it's sunny, he makes money.
Okay.
So that's the correlation issue that we're trying to deal with in using alternative assets, because over the last 15 years, what we've seen is some significant shocks to the market and how the market reacts.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've learned is that everything moves down together when we've got these significant shocks.
So we're talking with Thomas Seneca, who's giving us a tutorial on alternative investments, wealth management, and most importantly, TM Wealth Management. With a minute left, how do people get in touch with you, Thomas, and how do they find out more about what you can do for them in terms of alternative investment strategies as well as wealth management?
We invite them to explore our website at www.tm, tom-wealth.com. And there's a free white paper there on alternative strategies that I think would be really helpful for all your listeners.
So they can just download it and read all about your thoughts on what alternative strategies are.
Exactly.
Excellent. Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth today.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it.
And for those of you that read the Washington Business Journal, please do so once a month and look for my column, Blueprint for Wealth, and also check out my blog at blueprintforwealth.org. I'm Wayne Zell. Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth, and join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.